Hey, what's up, Madison?
Not much. Just getting back
Good.
from back-to-back consecutive trips.
My gosh. Yeah, usually after like a 3-day vacation, I'm like, you know what? I need a whole day to recoup.
Yeah.
So in your situation, I would want like 3 days to recoup.
Well, luckily I have a few days with nothing planned, but yeah, I was not home for just over 2 weeks, and it was so exhausting. Here's Brooke. She's coming.
Brooke, where are
Here,
you?
she's right here.
Brooke!
Hi.
I was nervous.
Nope, I'm here.
Did your parents get their car fixed or
Hello,
whatever?
friends. Yeah, something about Ohio. Oh, that's my sister. This is Taylor.
Hi,
Hi.
Taylor!
They have a new truck, and I guess you have to like, there's a pump fuel primer, something or other that you have to squeeze a couple of times every once in a while, which makes no sense to me if it's new, but
Oh.
yeah.
So their car is a lawnmower, is what you're saying.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah,
That's
pretty
funny.
much.
Oh my gosh. Well, hey, we're all here. We can get
We're
started.
here.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 6 of the Readers on the
Woo!
Wall. Guys, just so you know, I'm going to be mind blown when we get to double digits, when we get to 10.
Right?
Yeah, that's like the one I'm really
Yeah.
excited for. It's going to be great. Well, today we're going to be discussing the next three chapters in our reread, and those chapters are they're chapters 24 to 26, and they include Bran 4, Eddard 5, and Jon 4. But before we get into that, just a couple few announcements, I would say. Sometime this week, we're going to be creating a Readers on the Wall Facebook page where you guys can like, and it's not going to be a group, but it'll just be a page that if you like it, you can kind of keep up with our broadcasts. Maybe we'll post up a few other things, maybe some extra theory videos or just theory essays that we can think of or something like that. Is there anything else about that, Madison? Or is that pretty much all of it?
No, so like you're welcome to like our page so that you can follow us and we can like build up like a fan base, I guess. But if you don't want to, that's okay because we'll still share those videos in this group. So you can still come to
Yes.
this group to catch the videos.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're not ditching the Game of Thrones Addicts Facebook group. We're just going to be making a separate page, just so I don't know if maybe some people aren't a part of the Game of Thrones Addicts groups that would like to watch our videos, then it's
That's
available to
true.
them as well.
It'll just be easier to keep the videos organized and
Yeah.
trackable.
Exactly. Next announcement, I'm still working on the audio versions of these. I got them all loaded up onto my computer and recorded. I just have to go through and do some editing, cut out the beginning part and the end part, get rid of some of the filler words, things like that, which of course none of us
Thank
do.
you.
We're all very good at speech.
I have
Are
a
you
cannoli, just
really?
saying.
I'm not gonna lie, I can't remember the last time I had a cannoli, but that
You
sounds
don't have
really
enough to
tasty.
share. You shouldn't bring it to the call. That's
Pretty
okay. I
much.
have wine.
Oh,
Oh, see, I would trade
I just have water.
that.
I just have water.
It's
But
a
I do
Dornish. It's a Dornish vintage.
Ooh.
Grandma's doing
Not
this.
really.
I do have
No, really,
a
it's from a box.
Yeah, but you would have asked her, and if you would have asked, you would have said, "No, I have to do it myself." This
I
can't.
do I
They're
do
all
have a
talking to
triple
them.
berry pie waiting for me after we're done with this though, so I'm
Oh.
excited for that. Let's see. I can't really. Just another reminder. We do have an email set up. It's thereadersonthewall@gmail.com. If you have any questions or comments, or just want to give us some feedback on how the live shows are going, that'd be great. Just so we can keep improving, and because we're all really excited about this and we're sticking to it. Cool. So Madison, you went on vacation for like 2 weeks. Why don't you give us just a quick little, just Reader's Digest version? What did you do?
Okay, so the first thing I did is I went to Salt Lake City for my annual Young Living International Grand Convention. So what I do for a living is I sell essential oils and I teach people about essential oils. And so once a year we all go to Salt Lake City and we like learn about products and get educated on aromatherapy. So I did that for a week. It's always super fun. And then the second week I went to Colorado to the Loveland, Fort Collins area and stayed with family who own like a super fabulous like mansion on a lake.
Ooh.
And it was so fun, you guys. So I just like got to relax. I read. I actually didn't read Game of Thrones while I was there. I'm reading a different trilogy, a fantasy, grimdark fantasy trilogy by an author named Joe Abercrombie, and it's called the First Law Trilogy. And I'm almost finished with it now, and it is so good, you guys. Like, if you're a Game of Thrones fan and a Song of Ice and Fire fan, a George R. R. Martin fan, and you're looking for something else to read, check out Joe Abercrombie's stuff because you will love his writing style. So that's what I've been doing.
Nice. Brooke, anything fancy that happened this week?
No, not really. It's been hot here, so we've been swimming a lot, and my mother-in-law was here from Tuesday to Saturday, so that was so much fun.
it feels like me and you have the same reaction to my mother-in-law. So.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. I had a pretty interesting week, and then I have a little story to share before we jump into the chapters. That just kind of a cool experience I had this week. I got to go see Wicked, the Broadway play.
Yay!
Oh, man, it was really, really good. It just reminded me of like, wow, I do like musicals and this is a ton of fun. So all I've been listening to is the Wicked soundtrack all week, which is
a good one.
But it's kind of fun. Only negative
ones. Do you guys want to sing it right now?
Oh, I don't know if I can pull it off. Only negative was that the gal who played Galinda was just very average, in my opinion. But I still had a ton of fun, and it didn't ruin it or anything. But I was like, you know what? It's just kind of flat. I don't know. But other than
A musical junkie, too, so I find that very, very fun.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm a diehard Hamilton junkie, and I'm going to go see Hamilton again in August. But this time, I get to take my 8-year-old daughter with me, and I'm really excited.
Nice. I haven't seen Hamilton yet. Anastasia is coming to Portland next year, which I am.
Do it.
That's the one that I'm like, oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, do it.
So just a cool little story. This is a really cool little life lesson I had this week. So my job is I run a mobile car detailing business. So I go to people's homes, get their cars cleaned up, ready for sale, or just because it's freaking dirty and it needs to be cleaned. So I get to this lady's house, and as soon as she walks out the door, she just had this face, and the way she talked to me just said, I want to see your manager, and this isn't going to be a fun experience.
Oh, no.
Just as soon as she walked out, and I was like, oh, man. All right. Well, let's see what we can do. So I get to her car. It's a 20-year-old Jetta that she drives every day, and it's just a pile of garbage. So I'm like, all right, well, we're going to do our best, and we're going to get this thing looking way better. So we spend 3 hours just on the inside of the car, which is about twice as long as we spend on other cars. And she comes out, and all she does is bitch and moan at me. And like, oh, this seat, I don't know if it was teared, you know, when you guys got it. Oh, this seat should come out cleaner, blah, blah, blah. And it went on for quite a while. And eventually I was like, you know what? We're just going to leave because you're not cooperating. She still paid us, which was actually kind of nice. So I'm driving to the next client and I'm just kind of furious. I'm really irritated. I get to this next lady's house. I clean up her car. And as I'm finishing up, she comes up to me and she says, hey, I'm fostering some kittens. Do you want to come pet some kittens? And I was like,
oh,
yes, I do. Yes, I do. So we go up, and she has 5 kittens, and I'm petting them and having a great time. And this lady, she's like 60 or something. She's just telling me all these great stories, and she's just super nice. We get downstairs, and she's like, hey, I have a bunch of blueberries. Do you want like 3 quarts of blueberries? And I was like,
I love her.
And I was like, yes, I do. So she hands me a bag of blueberries, and then I finish up her car because I really want to make sure it looks good because I really like her. And right before I'm leaving, she's like, hey, can I give you a hug? I need a hug.
Aww.
And I was like, I could use one too. And so gave her a hug, and I went and I got in the car and drove off. And I was like, it just blows my mind how much of a difference it makes when you're not an asshole to people and you're just kind. You're just super sweet to them. There's no point to be just so rude to people. And it just makes everything so much better. I mean, just in terms of my job, like if I'm working on a car and someone's extremely nice to me, I want to work like 4 times harder to make sure they're happy. But as soon as you say something rude to me, my motivation just drops. And I think that's just a general thing for everything.
Yeah, the road goes both ways.
Yeah, especially like if you're working over somebody and you're trying to help them. You know, like, let's say you're the boss if you're a total a-hole to all of them, they're all going to resent you and they don't want to work. And, but if you're kind to them, I think just everything, I don't know, just the world's better when you're kind, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So that was just a cool experience I had.
I was just reading an article that's funny because I was just reading an article today about there's a restaurant somewhere in the U.S. I can't remember where. They have a deduction off of your bill for being nice, like off of It was a $100 bill that got like $15 off just because they were nice to the waitress. So
that's awesome.
That's a good idea.
See, I love that. Well, cool. Hey, that's just some cool experience to all this week. But why don't we jump into the chapters? That's why we're here, right?
That's right.
All righty. So we are going to be starting with chapter 24, which is Bran 4. And I'll read the chapter summary here. Bran is bedridden from his fall, and he looked out at Rickon playing with the direwolves, and begins to bitterly realize all the other things he can't do anymore, and believes that the crow that was in his dream basically lied to him, that he made him believe that he was going to fly, that he was going to walk again, and that he just straight up lied to him. Old Man stays with Bran most of the time, and she attempts to tell him a story, but is met with resistance from Bran. She then tells the story of the Long Night, an event many years back where the White Walkers attacked, and winter lasted a generation. They're interrupted by Maester Luwin and Hodor. We get to meet Hodor!
Hodor!
So excited! who then bring Bran down to see Tyrion, who's visiting Winterfell. Rob is very hostile towards Tyrion. He's sitting up at a chair. He's got his sword drawn across his laps, and he's just not very happy to see Tyrion. Let's see. Tyrion gives Maester Luwin the plans to create a saddle that can be built so that Bran can ride a horse again. And then he heads off to an inn. Yoren and the other members of the Night's Watch dine with Bran and Rob and inform them of their Uncle Benjen's disappearance, which Rob won't believe that his uncle could be dead, and kind of goes on a little tirade about it. Rob then brings Bran up to his room and sits with him in the darkness and talks of all the adventures they're going to go on, but eventually break down and begin to cry, which is probably one of the most emotional moments in this book. Like, it's, we'll get to it. It's kind of at the end of the chapter, but that part kind of hit me pretty hard. Just one quick note that I had before we get into the discussion questions. I was reading, as soon as I read this chapter, it actually reminded me of The Princess Bride, just how the setup is. You got the kid in the bed, the older person telling him a story, and the kid's just like, I hate stories. Like, I don't want to hear it. Whatever. This is a terrible story. And eventually, you know, they kind of warm up to it, and then all of a sudden they're like, wait, don't stop telling the story. Like, I got to know what happens next. And I feel like that the same thing is happening between Bran and Old Man here.
That's a good observation. I like that.
I know. I love that movie.
It's a good
Me
movie.
Too. Who doesn't love that movie? It's like a perfect movie.
Right. So Madison, like, what did you think? What did you think of this chapter just in general?
Oh, so I really liked it. I probably wrote more notes on this chapter than the other two. I enjoyed them all, mm-hmm. but I probably made more observations in this chapter, I would say. I like it because you get a little bit, you get a little bit of everything. You get some Bran and Old Man. You get, you know, Rob being Lord Rob. You get some Tyrion action. You get that Night's Watch, you know, the report on Benjen. And then, of course, like you said, the interaction between Bran and Rob, where he kind of takes a step back from being Lord Rob and goes back to being, you know, the kid. So I thought it was just a really dynamic chapter that had lots of really good interactions. And so, mm-hmm. Like I said, I probably wrote more notes on this chapter than the others because I just found it to be really good, really entertaining.
Great. Brooke, did you have any thoughts, just how you felt about it when you first read it?
I like the chapter. I like that we got to hear the beginning of the last hero story. Definitely mm-hmm. like the scene between Rob and Bran because it was so touching, you know, just to see those emotions. I agree. I made more notes on this chapter than I did the others too, even though it wasn't like action wise, it wasn't packed. I feel like there was a lot of like foreshadowing and different things that were tucked into this chapter than the other two. So.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Great. Great. Yeah. No, I thoroughly enjoyed it as well. I don't know. I was just so excited to meet Hodor, to be honest. Like, because honestly, I remember reading this chapter and I watched a little bit of the TV show, so I knew who Hodor was and kind of this fan base around him, and it just blew my mind. I was like, oh my gosh, he has a real name. Like, you know?
So I have a question for you mm-hmm. on that note. Why do you think in the show they changed his name from Walder to Willis? Just because of the confusion. You know, they did the same thing with Osha. They changed, or with Asha. They changed Asha's name to Yara just because they didn't want her to be confused with Osha, the wildling. Mm-hmm. So do you think maybe just because that two Walders would, and obviously we all hate Walder Frey, and so maybe they just wanted to kind of separate that? And like, why do you think they did that?
No, that's exactly what I think it is. Because the thing is, like, you find out his name is Walder, and then you make the connection, like, oh, whoa, like, all the Freys are named Walder. Like, maybe there's something there. And it never really pays off, or you never really find out why. So changing the name doesn't, you know, basically the name Walder isn't significant enough that they have to keep it. So I think it was just a, hey, there's already a Walder. Let's just change it to something similar, and it's not going to be as giant impact on the story.
I like him as a Willis person.
it's a good name. It's definitely a good name. Just while we're on this Hodor track, I thought it was kind of interesting. Okay, so as we know, as we've all seen the show, we know the fate that Hodor, you know, his fate in the end, that he eventually is killed, and his name is basically just a shortened version of Hold the Door. And keeping that in mind, it was just kind of interesting to me that the way we were introduced to Hodor is that he was opening a door. He kind of slammed the door open when Maester Luwin and him show up. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting little tidbit there. So, guys, so tell me, what did you guys think about Old Man's story about the last hero and the long night? Was there anything you gleaned out of that story that you wanted to share?
Let me get to my notes here.
Not really any. Okay, let me look through my notes real quick. Not any, but not. I don't think any. Like. Okay, so. Okay, so again, the way I started my journey with Game of Thrones is watching most of the show first, then going back and reading in between seasons. And so before I read. So the way I watch a show is I usually watch a show with my phone in my hand, and I'm like Googling and Wikipedia-ing, is that a word, Wikipedia-ing things, as I go, because I want to, I can't just watch a show, I have to like study it. And so when Old Man started telling the story, I immediately started looking up the history of The Long Night and the Children of the Forest, and so I immediately had like background to go with it. And so now rereading it, because I want to say that the show sticks pretty close to that verbiage in her story. Like, that's something that they really did, I want to say, pretty close to the, you know, word for word. And so again, not that when I read it wasn't interesting, but I kind of felt like I already had like the background and stuff to go with it, and so it wasn't like this mysterious, you know, lure to me. It was more like, yep, she's telling the story of the history of, you know, of what I already know.
No, most definitely. Yeah. I mean, it was just, especially in the show, I just kind of liked how they, I didn't get to watch the scene, but I just remember it, how they really focused in on her talking about it. And there was this sort of almost dark aura around her almost, and this really gloomy voice. And I was just like, okay, like, this is serious. We need to focus. And I think that actually kind of goes along with how Bran is viewing these stories. Like, so Old Man's like basically like offering, like, hey, should I tell you a story about this, or what about Bran the Builder? I know he was one of your favorites, and he's just like, I hate stories. I don't want to hear them anymore. And then she, I don't know. I kind of like her sass. She comes back with, she's like, oh, I know a story about little boys who hate stories.
Hate stories, yeah.
It's like, Old Man, you. I don't know. I feel like she's someone who just doesn't take any crap from kids.
Well, and
right?
She's like, kid, this is not my first rodeo. You want to know how many kids I've raised, how many sassy little sick boys I've had to look after? Like, you can't, you know, you can't pull this crap with me. Like, Old Man knows what's up.
And then one part before she talks about the Long Night that I really liked is so it goes through that, like, which story should I tell you, basically, and Bran says, that's not my favorite, talking about Bran, the story of Bran the Builder. My favorites were the scary ones. And then it goes, then the next paragraph, Old Man says, oh, my sweet summer child, what do you know of fear? Fear is for the winter, my little lord, when the snow falls 100 feet deep and the ice wind comes howling out of the north. Fear is for the long night when the sun hides its face for years years at a time, and the little children are born and live and die all in darkness, while the direwolves grow gaunt and hungry, and the White Walkers move through the woods. I just really like that section because, like, if we just bring it to modern terms, like I personally don't like horror movies. I don't know. Do you guys like watch those kind of things at all?
I do.
You do?
Not really.
No, that's great because I don't have any experience with it. So, Brooke, tell us, why do you like horror movies? Like, you know, fear-inducing movies.
I don't know. It's just it's that heart-pounding anticipation you get. Like, you know something's coming, but you don't know what it is, and you don't know mm-hmm. when it's going to happen. And it's just you like that feeling of being on the edge of your seat, not knowing something's going to happen, but you don't know what. And I think that's what does it for me, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know, I think this is a pretty obvious question, but if you put yourself actually in that movie and literally, like, someone's chasing you, trying to kill you, you'd probably be scared out of your mind.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. So
I like watching the horror movies that could be real, like the ghost ones where it's all, you know, really ghosty and like paranormal and that kind of stuff. That one doesn't really get to me. But like, there's this one movie and I can't even remember the name of it. I watched it on Netflix one time and it was about like a plane had crashed and the chemicals got into the drinking water and it turned everyone crazy. I like mm-hmm. stuff like that because, I mean, that could technically happen. I don't know if they'd go crazy like they did, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like a more real scenario, so it really gets the hair on your arms raised, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, totally get you. And I just kind of like how old Dan is basically saying, like, look, I'm going to tell you this story. And just the way she puts it in that paragraph, it's like, you really need to pay attention because this is something that actually happened.
Right.
Like you may think this is a fun story, but it's not. And now I'm going to get into it. You know, especially when it gets into the next paragraph, she talks about, you know, in that darkness, the others came for the first time. They were cold things, dead things. That hated iron and fire and the sun of and the touch of the sun and every creature with hot blood in its veins. And it gets down to the end and says they hunted the maids through frozen forests and fed their dead servants on the flesh of human children. And just, you know, like, I don't know, like,
delightful.
We could watch. Yeah, right. Well, it's one of those things. It just kind of interests me how, like, if we watched that on a TV show, we'd be like, you know, like Brooke said, on the edge of our seat. And like excited, like, oh man, like, this is crazy. But if you put yourself in that real world scenario, you're just like, that is absolutely terrifying. And I think that's what old Nan is trying to like convey, like, this did happen, and
you know,
this
what,
is a hint
though?
That's going to happen.
I feel like old Nan's story kind of contributes to why winter coming in the show was such a freaking disappointment, because it's so terrifying in the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, winter lasted for a decade. And, you know, like you said, like, you had no choice but to eat, you know, your horses and your children or whatever.
Right.
Because, and then, did they ever mention the fact that summer went on for like 15 years? Like, is that the longest summer in history? Because at the beginning of the show, it was supposed to be the end of a long summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went on for what, another 5-6 years? Like, nobody talked about that. And then winter came, but it really wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. No,
and
no.
Then spring. I'm like, wait a second. Nan told us this was going to be bad. Like, this is supposed to be the second coming along. I mean, I guess the Night King died, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just like, weather was supposed to play into this a lot more than I think it did.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the weather?
No, I 100% agree. I think if you took any show fan, they just watched the shows and you had them read this section, they'd be disappointed in the show.
That story is scarier than what happened.
It is. I mean,
yeah.
we were supposed to have ice spiders, people. I mean,
yeah. We were supposed to have a long night,
whatever. I can't remember if we've read it yet or if it's going to come up, but I want to say old Nan tells this story of how, I can't remember where it's at, but basically during the longer winters, it was almost, not a tradition, that's not the right word, but basically the older people of the family, when food supply would get low, basically they would say, hey, I'm going to go out hunting to get more food, and basically they'd go out and they would die so that the rest of the family would have enough food to survive the rest of the winter. And just for, I mean, just for the winter to get that bad that you,
right?
That literally,
so your old people have to sacrifice themselves. Yeah.
Right? It's just, I don't know. Like, it's just so much more serious in the books. And yes. I don't think we need to make light of it ever. And I think we really need to keep it in our mind that bad stuff is coming. Just like the others, you know, they're always in the back of our mind, but there's so much stuff happening in the politics of Westeros. I forget about it.
The beginning of this book, though, just makes you feel like almost like the weather itself is a villain. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get any of that in the show. So I hope that in these last books that are coming someday, I hope that that is really played up more, because I love that. That's a built-in gift that he gave himself, was using weather as a main character almost. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they took advantage of that. So
no, I agree.
Anyway.
let's see. Just another thing I had on the story, just kind of, I don't know. I just kind of like the basis of it, how basically the long night comes, the others are killing people. Everything's going pretty dang bad. Then it talks about the last hero. He basically seeks out the children of the forest to find an answer, and we can assume that he found an answer because the White Walkers did eventually go away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know. I feel like this does. I feel like this can kind of give us a hint towards this. Like, okay, so Craster, who lives beyond the wall, we find out that he's basically giving human children to the White Walkers to sort of appease them, and I don't know. I feel like that kind of tells us that basically, I don't know what they're doing with these children, but that's basically a solution to stall the White Walkers. He's basically giving them the children. They say, okay, cool. You got a couple more days until we're back knocking on your door. And what I just find interesting is that the last hero goes out, presumably finds a solution, but he actually doesn't destroy the White Walkers. Like, they're not dead.
It's a bargain. It's mm-hmm. Like, that's what you think. It's like a mutual agreement, like a
treaty or a pact or something.
I'm looking for a word. Keep going. I'll think of it in a second.
An offering, something like that. But you know, it just kind of, I don't know. This is the first time it was ever emphasized to me that, like, okay, like, we think of the last hero and Azor Ahai and all them basically defeating the White Walkers, them going away, but they didn't permanently get rid of them. Like, they were still around. They just waited a lot longer. So if we take Craster's solution of how to stall the White Walkers by giving him his children and them doing whatever they want with it, I'm just really curious what actually happened with the last hero in Azor Ahai. Like, he had to have done something to stall them for a very, very long time, but it definitely wasn't a permanent solution.
Harrison, we're all curious. That's why some of us are so disappointed.
I know.
Because I assumed that it was going to be some plot line pointing at, you know, the last hero made some, there is a word I'm looking for that's the perfect word for what I'm trying to say, but made some sort of a treaty that in a sense put them in an resting state for thousands of years. But when that treaty was up, they came back, and I thought that that plot line was going to play out to where, you know, another sacrifice had to be made, or another, humans had to hold up their end of this bargain. And that idea was not brought to light. And so I'm interested, because I do believe that all this history and lore was written for a reason. And so I'm confident that we're going to get some answers someday.
Someday, George.
Someday. Fingers crossed.
Pretty much. I feel like that's a whole other topic that I don't know. I'm trying to do a little more research throughout the weeks just on different theories, so that when we get to them, I can kind of talk about them more. And I don't know. One thing that I, this is just a personal note for me. I was thinking, like, oh man, like, if I don't share this cool thing, I'll never get to talk about it. And I'm like, Harrison, come on. There's plenty of time. You'll be all right. Like, they're going to talk about the last hero again at some point. We can talk about it then. Let's see. Did you have a thought?
I was going to say, I just made some kind of basic notes, if you want me just to go through them real quick, and then we can.
Sure. So just a quick rundown of the questions. We're going to be talking about Tyrion a little bit later and Bran's dream. So if you want to share anything.
I think
before
for the
that.
Most part, I avoided those, so I knew we were going to talk about them. So I really liked the quote. We've talked about this in the past about how the direwolves, you know, have magic abilities with the Stark children. with the warging and the, you know, supernatural connection. And mm-hmm. I love the quote in the very beginning when he is watching, he's watching Grey Wind and Shaggy Dog and Summer play in the courtyard, and he's making observations about them. And the observation he makes about Summer is that he had eyes of, I always want to call Summer a girl because I feel like that's a girl name.
Me too. But,
he had eyes of yellow and gold that saw all there was to see. And I thought that was some nice premonition or foreshadowing about Bran's abilities. Obviously, mm-hmm. eyes that saw all that there was to see. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Actually, just a note, that does actually come up quite a few times. I know Nymeria, her eyes are described as gold coins, which is just a reference to the coin, to the Braavos coin that Arya gets later. Shaggy Dog's eyes are described as green, and I don't know, just like my first thought was his eyes are green, Wildfire is green, and Shaggy Dog is definitely the more wild of the bunch, especially in later chapters. Like Shaggy Dog ends up attacking a few people and just kind of going a little crazy. So that was just kind of just a little thing I noticed I wanted to share. But anyways, continue, Madison.
And yeah, Rickon can't zigzag.
Oh, I wonder if Shaggy Dog can. Okay, I thought this was just kind of a cute observation I saw, that all of the kids, no matter how old they are, they consider themselves almost a man grown, or almost almost an adult. Like Arya is like, I'm basically grown up, and Sansa is like, I might as well be queen now, I'm so grown up. Like, they both said things about how grown up they are. And of course we've heard John many times say that he's almost a man grown. And then in this one, Bran is like, I'm 8 years old. I'm almost a man.
I know.
It's funny that every single one of these Stark kids /Snow have considered themselves to be, like, they consider themselves to be as good as grown-ups. You know, they might as well be. And I thought that was just kind of interesting and kind of cute. Yeah. They've all basically said that at one point or another.
Well, even Rickon, there's a part I think it's the first Catelyn chapter where Catelyn's talking about Rickon, and she mentions his age, him being 3 years old, and Ned even replies, he's like, well, he won't be three forever, he's got to start growing up.
Yeah, he's basically grown up.
It's just like, he's three, dude. Like well, my kid's three.
He's a 3 year old.
He's not grown up. Yeah, also in this chapter, like, when the direwolves attack Tyrion, it says that Rickon finally remembered himself and called Shaggy Dog to him, and it's like, he's three! You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
that is pretty dang impressive. I mean,
yeah. I did make a note of that because I literally said out loud, I was like, aw, where he goes, home, Shaggy Dog, home now. And I'm like, that's so cute that he is Shaggy Dog's home.
Yeah.
I love that. I thought that was adorable. I just imagine, like, my little three-year-old calling our dog, meaning like, come home.
Right.
Why do you guys think that nobody replied to the ravens about Bran's recovery or his, you know, waking up? So it says that they sent, ravens to, like, everyone who mattered. And mm-hmm. meanwhile, poor Bran just thinks no one cares. And Maester Luwin's like, oh, maybe the ravens died. Like,
yeah.
Or got lost.
Right.
No one replied?
That is pretty rough. I mean, let me think. I don't know. Maybe.
I'm heartbroken.
The only reason I can think of, because I'm assuming three got sent, at least two got sent out that I can think of, would be one to John and one to Ned. I don't really see how he could send one to Catelyn when she's on the road. But I don't know about John. That's probably just lazy. Like, come on, dude.
Or they didn't let him, maybe?
Yeah, that could be another thing. You know what? That's probably what it is. I mean, if we remember back when Tyrion is heading back to Winterfell, he's like, hey, why don't you send Jon Snow with me? He can be one of my guards. And then Mormont's like, no, we can't let them still be connected to their family. We need them to disengage from that. Maybe it's the same thing. Maybe he's like, hey, like, this is great news, but we're not going to let you write them back. We don't want to, you know, keep that. We want to basically break that bond almost, which is kind of sad. And then, I don't know. Ned's just got a lot on his plate. I don't know if he's got time to sit down and write a letter.
I don't buy that.
I know. It's kind of a lame excuse. Come on, dude. You can write down, like, hey, Bran, sweet. Hope I see you soon.
Or have one of the girls answer or something.
Right. One of his stewards.
Yeah. I mean, also, I don't know. I'm sure there is someone out there who has figured out how long it takes a raven to fly from Winterfell to King's Landing. Like, at first someone's figured it out. I am not that person, sadly. So who knows? Maybe it just takes longer than Bran's thinking. Maybe he's just impatient.
Well, according to the writers in season 7, it doesn't take
long. Oh, right. I forgot they can run across, you know.
Right?
Anyways, let's...
Okay.
Let's
this is something about when Old Man is talking. And I thought it was just a nice little nod back to some favorite fan theories when at the end of Old Man's story, he says that all of the Brandon Starks had become one person. It just made my heart warm and reminded me of the days when I still had hopes and dreams.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I'm assuming you're talking about a Bran basically being every Bran throughout history.
And it was never my favorite fan theory, but I do enjoy fan theories. And so I saw that and I was like, oh, that's so cool. Like,
back
this isn't
the
there. Back in the day. But no, I thought that was a cool line, how she, you know, all the Brandons have become one in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of an interesting...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it to me, it's strong enough that if George wanted to write it that way, he could, because that's a strong enough... That could be used as foreshadowing.
A big enough hint, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's just cool how he used that name Brandon to kind of emphasize how old Nan actually is. Like, just she's been around for so long, and she has a ton of history with her, and it kind of gives her a little bit of credibility to when she speaks and when she tells stories. You're just like, okay, like, she knows her stuff. She might get a few Brandons mixed up, but she's got this.
When we transition to that scene with Rob and Tyrion talking, you know, he has his sword across his lap. And I thought that was cool because in Jon's chapter, he talks about in the crypts how all the kings of winter in the crypts have the sword across their lap as well. And basically, the symbolism of that is kind of a way, it's a sign of hostility. It's a way of saying, like, I would like to kill you, but unfortunately, that is illegal. So, like, this is what we're going to have to do, is I'm going to have to pretend to like you, and you're going to have to pretend to be polite. And the fact that he, like, went out of his way to point out that the Night's Watch was always welcome, like, that was some pretty serious shade. And I thought it was interesting because, like, in Rob's mind, he's, like, outraged. Like, how dare this man show back up? He tried to kill my brother. Because as far as he knows, you know, Catelyn left to go work all this out because they think that a Lannister tried to kill Bran. But meanwhile, Bran and Tyrion, like the two key players, are clueless. They have no idea why Rob is being so rude. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, Tyrion's like, oh, yeah, the Starks and the Lannisters, you know, we're not exactly cool. But he's probably like, what the heck, dude? Like,
pretty much.
What's
with
the sword? Like, apparently it was a hostile gesture.
So, Brooke, do you think Rob's just being an arrogant little lord, or what do you think?
I think so. You can definitely tell there's, like, when they start talking about Benjen and how he's at dinner and how he's missing, and Yoren's like, oh, well, I'm sure he's probably dead. And Rob gets so upset, and he starts, like, yelling, like, he's not dead. You can tell that, like, he's not fully matured into that lord role yet, so a lot of his emotions come through. So I think that is what it is. You know, he, as far as his mom has told him, it was a Lannister who hurt his brother, and now there's a Lannister showing back up, and he's the only one there to defend Winterfell from the Lannisters at this point. So I think that's what it is. He's just so, you know, he remembers that he's got to be the Lord, but in the back of his mind, he's like, what the hell are you doing back here? You know what I mean? So.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Like, so, like, I don't want to bash him too much, because honestly, like, what, he's 14 years old. He's running Winterfell, like just from the description of Bran talking about it, he's running Winterfell, he's even traveling outside of Winterfell to visit other people.
Mm-hmm.
He's training people in the yard, he's training himself. Like, he's doing a lot of stuff that I would never expect.
It's a lot of pressure.
Like even a 14 to, let's say, like a 17-year-old nowadays, like, I would never have done that at that age in my lifetime. So, like, I want to make sure Rob gets his props, that he's doing pretty dang good. for what
he's doing his best. Like, you know, he's trying to like weigh out all the pros and cons and think things through. Mm-hmm. And like, luckily he has Lewin there to kind of like whisper in his ear, literally whisper in his ear.
Right.
To best, and basically say like, hey, even if this guy is a threat, like, he's not going to do anything like obvious. Cause I mean, he came here. Like, if he were guilty, like, that's just a pretty bold move if you're guilty to show back up unannounced, uninvited, and bring a gift and act all chummy. Like, I mean, that's just some suspicious behavior for someone who's guilty.
No, 100% agree. So, since we're in the section of the story, so what do you guys think about the reaction that the direwolves had to Tyrion? I mean, they come in and they're like viciously very angry at Tyrion. So,
and it's like, poor Tyrion, this is his second time being attacked by a direwolf.
No, it's true. Like, there's like, yeah, Tyrion is a great example of that happening. Yeah, and it also, along with Bran, by the way, that kid is almost killed like so many times in this book. It kind of blows my mind. But yeah, Brooke, why don't you start? Like, why do you think they were so hostile towards him?
I think that it plays off of how the direwolves are in tune with the Stark children's emotions. And I think because Rob was so emotional that Greywyn picked up on that, and then I feel like the rest of the pack picked up on that. And they just had that pack mentality and then mm-hmm. ended up going after Tyrion because of it. I feel like that's why, because not, like you said, you know, Bran, he and Rickon, they don't know what's going on and they weren't all that upset. So at first I was like, well, so why did all three of them? And I feel like it's just that pack mentality that once one was upset, they all banded together to take out the enemy or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So my first view on it was, I like the way you said it, because I think that's eventually what this scene meant. I think originally when George wrote it, if we go back to his original write-up of the story, it does talk about how Tyrion actually had the role of sacking Winterfell and basically taking control of it. That was his original idea. So I think it was supposed to be foreshadowing of that event occurring that the direwolf sort of picked up on and said, like, hey, it's not happening now, but eventually this guy is going to do something very bad to the Starks, right, and I need to protect my owners. So I think, like I said, I think that's what originally it was supposed to be, but I think Brooke, your explanation is what it eventually means, that it was they're just connecting to their owners and they're just mirroring their emotions. Madison, did you have anything to add to that question? Or
no, I totally agree.
Awesome. I was curious, so this is the second time we have heard this comment that you Starks are hard to kill. And I'm just curious if you guys had any thoughts on that, because as we know, there are quite a few Starks that do end up being killed, namely Catelyn and Rob and Ned. Those are the three big ones. I just find it was just kind of interesting to hear that twice. I don't know if Grimm's like trying to hint towards us, like, just, you know, everyone's saying Starks are hard to kill, but eventually they're going to die. Like, right, did you guys have... Yeah, right?
Yeah, like, don't get too attached. Like, just because it seems like they're going to be okay doesn't mean they are.
Mm-hmm. I would say the only truth... The big truth to that, I would say, is... I would say Bran and Jon are the two. Especially those two that... I guess Arya and even Sansa, you can wrap them into that. I mean, like I said, Bran, his life is in danger in almost every single one of his chapters. You know, not this one, but like an assassin comes after him and he got pushed out of a window. Eventually he's going to run into some deserters of the Night's Watch and the Wildlings, and they're going to hold him up for hostage and might kill him too. You got Jon who comes back from the dead. You got Arya who goes through just the craziest story that I could ever think of, in my opinion. And I guess Sansa, she's basically living in a den of lions. So I think the statement is about half true. Let's see.
Well, and from the book's perspective, Catelyn is very hard to kill.
That's a good point. That's true. She is still alive. Let's see. The only other part I had. Let's see. The last discussion question I had was just about Bran's dream. Let's see here. I can read it through it really quick here. Okay, so it says, in his dream, he was climbing again, pulling himself up an ancient windowless tower, his fingers forcing themselves between blackened stones, his feet scrabbling for purchase. Higher and higher he climbed through the clouds and into the sky, into the night sky, and still the tower rose before him. When he paused to look down, his head swam dizzily, and he felt his fingers slipping. Bran cried out and clung for dear life. The earth was 1,000 miles beneath him, and he could not fly. He could not fly. He waited until his heart had stopped pounding, until he could breathe, and he began to climb again. There was no way to go up. Far above him, outlined against a vast pale moon, he thought he could see the shapes of gargoyles. His arms were sore and aching, but he dared not rest. He forced himself to climb faster. The gargoyles watched him ascend. Their eyes glowed red as hot coals in a brazier. Perhaps once they had been lions, but now they were twisted and grotesque. Bran could hear them whispering to each other in soft stone voices, terrible to hear. He must not listen, he told himself. He must not hear. So long as he did not hear them, he was safe. But when the gargoyles pulled themselves loose from the stone and padded down the side of the tower to where Bran clung, he knew he was not safe after all. I didn't hear, he wept as they came closer and closer. I didn't. Madison, like, did you have any thoughts on that dream? Do you think it's just a reenactment of what happened to him, or?
So, you know, maybe I'm like, woo, like missing stuff, but I do feel like it's just a reenactment of the trauma he went through. Mm-hmm. And just his brain letting him know, like, you do remember what happened, because, mm-hmm. you know, he doesn't remember. Like, it's his big thing is I don't remember. But I think it's just his subconscious or his third eye or whatever letting him know that, like, you do remember, and it'll be important someday. But mm-hmm. just letting him know that what happened to him was important and that, you know, it's mm-hmm. in there.
No, good. Yeah, I would say I agree. I think it is just a reenactment of what happened to him. But what I find interesting, especially that line that says, perhaps once they had been lions. You know, yeah. Representing the Lannisters and who they are, and I think this dream is in here to show us that the Blood Raven he altered Bran's memory, and he made sure that he couldn't remember who these two gargoyles are, like who they are in real life, mm-hmm. but he still remembers basically what happened to him, because it's pretty accurate to what actually happened to him. The only thing that's really changed is who is up there talking. So I just find it interesting that he didn't get rid of this whole memory. He just got rid of who it was.
Right.
Because if Bran figures out who it was that pushed him out of the window, I feel like that would have distracted him from his main goal of
right.
you know, taking him and becoming.
And it would have, like we said before, would have started a war. But like the Raven reminded him in his dream, that's not what's important. Like, that's mm-hmm. not his purpose.
Do you think that he could not fly in this dream because he was looking at the past rather than kind of trying to forget it and look towards the future?
That's interesting. I like that. I really like that, because, I mean, it could be, you know, of course, Bran's not going to physically fly, but maybe it is, you know, he's able to fly in his dreams. And no, I agree with that, actually. He's looking into the past before it was. That's not what Blood Raven wants him to do.
He's already been reprimanded for that once. Mm-hmm. So, don't look at the past, like your job is in the future. And he's already shown him what's important. So, yeah, I like that.
I like that. 5 points, Brooke. Good job.
Gold star.
Boom, gold star. Let's see. So I just have a couple other miscellaneous thoughts for this chapter to share. Let's see. One kind of, I don't know, it was kind of like it's an interesting way of foreshadowing it. But when we're introduced to Hodor and Bran's telling us how, you know, that's the only word he knows, and that being his name, Theon actually comes and says something along the lines of, like, you know what, you can't disagree that Hodor will always remember his name. And I just kind of find that interesting, because Theon eventually ends up in a place in the books where he ends up with a new name, and he can't remember his original name. He can't remember who he is because of the trauma that Ramsay puts him through. And it's just kind of it's just an interesting way to foreshadow Theon's future. Let's see. Oh, here, let me see if I can find it real quick. I think I remember underlining it. Oh yeah. So this is back at the beginning of the chapter where Bran is, he's basically looking out at the yard and he's, you know, feeling pretty bad about himself, that he won't be able to become a knight, that he won't be able to do all the things that Rickon and Rob will be able to do. And it says, and he's kind of brooding on, like, you know, he woke up and everyone was gone, which is pretty dang traumatizing. I mean, it's really terrible. I mean, he wakes up, his legs are broken, his mom and dad are gone. Even like most of the household guard that I'm sure he got very familiar with and knows who they are gone as well. And he says, yet to Bran, it felt as if they had all died while he had slept. Or perhaps Bran had died and they had forgotten him. Jory and Sir Roderick and Bane Poole had gone too, and Holland and Harwin and Fat Tom and a quarter of the guard. And just a note of there, besides, I think, Harwin, all of the names he listed are people who are dead now. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, that's just a tiny little nod to, like, these people probably are going to die as the story goes on. I think, like I said, I think Harwin's the only one who's alive right now. That's about, oh, like, I guess my last note that I wanted to share is just at the end. I just thought it'd be good to read just that last line, because one of the most interesting parts of Rob, in my opinion, is when he's very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of saddening, but Bran says, "Are they ever coming back?" Bran asked. Yes, Rob said with such hope in his voice that Bran knew he was hearing his brother and not just Rob the Lord. Mother will be home soon. Maybe we can ride out to meet her when she comes. Wouldn't that surprise her to see you a horse? Even in the dark, Bran could feel his brother smile. And afterward, we'll ride north to see the wall. We won't even tell John we're coming. We'll just be there one day, and you and me. It'll be an adventure. An adventure, Bran repeated wistfully. He heard his brother sob. The room was so dark he could not see the tears on Rob's face. So he reached out and found his hand, their fingers twined together. And just Bran repeating, like, oh, it's going to be an adventure. I think that just tells us, like adventures are over. Like, we're not going to have these exciting, you know, fun times between the Starks anymore, or really anybody anymore. Like, everything is very serious right now. And there's no time for games. There's no time for these fun family visits anymore. And it's just, it's really just, you know, it's kind of disheartening and really sad to read, just to, you know, it's like, you know, seeing childhood die, basically. Did you guys have any other thoughts you wanted to share on this chapter before we move on?
I just had two little things. I don't think they're very significant. One was, and I don't know why I keep picking up on this, but they specifically keep saying that Bran and also Jeor Mormont keep feeding corn to the crows or the ravens. And I'm like, why are they specifically saying corn? Like, maybe I'm just going off on a whole thing, you know what I mean? But I looked it up, and in the Bible, the word corn was commonly used for all grains, so that could be just the explanation there. But it also was to indicate spiritual goodness. Mm-hmm. So I was like, that's interesting, because we know Jeor is, you know, a pretty good guy. He does never really do anything wrong other than kind of accept Craster for what he is. So I thought maybe that was kind of interesting. And it might be nothing, but I thought it was that was interesting. And then go ahead.
Yeah, no, just an extra thought of that. I think it does have some pretty significance. Just mainly Bran's name. I just looked it up, pieces of grain husk separated for flour after milling. So the way I view it is Bran's giving part of himself to these crows. You know, he's sacrificing who he is. He's giving, like, kind of like we talked about before, he's giving up his childhood. He's giving up his future, basically, to give to the crows, to become them, to become Blood Raven or the Three-Eyed Raven or whatever you want to call him. And I'm sure there might be something deeper, maybe if you put on your tinfoil hat a little bit, but that's just kind of what I get out of it.
I like that. And then the only other thing I picked up on was, so when Tyrion and the men of the Night's Watch first come in, Rob sits in his father's chair in the Great Hall, but at dinner, he doesn't sit at his spot. Why?
I noticed that too and thought it. I didn't write it down, but I don't know, because I don't know.
I would say the only thing I can think of just off the top of my head, maybe it's just to increase that intimidation factor for Tyrion. Maybe when he heard, like, oh, it's Tyrion who's coming to visit, I'm gonna sit in my father's throne because I need to show my dominance. I need to show him that I am the Lord of Winterfell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he can't come in and, you know, run my house or do whatever he wants in my house. He's got to go through me, and I'm going to have the official word on if you are allowed to be here or not.
Yep. And maybe dinner, maybe it's kind of like an act of respect, like he's holding the seat for his father, you know, like I'm acting as Lord, but like you are all my father's men, and like he's coming home, and you know, someday, maybe it's just kind of a visual representation of like Ned is still here, you know.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That it could also be, you know, as we learn in the last chapter, I believe we learn that, you know, part of Ned's ruling style is that he likes to bring people of his household guard to come to speak to him. Like he'll bring up old man during dinner and they'll talk and converse, or the blacksmith and so on and so forth. So maybe Rob's kind of emulating that with this. He's sitting with the men, you know, on mm-hmm. the same level as the men of the Night's Watch. He's not sitting up on a throne on his father's throne to sort of, you know, exert that dominance or that I'm higher than you. He's like, hey, I'm going to get on your level. We're going to figure this out.
Of course, he has a thing though that George made a point to bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the, you know, you can't write that off. The point that he made a point to say he was sitting in a seat, now he's not. Makes mm-hmm. you want to take note of it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Well, cool. If that's all we have, then we can scooch on to the next chapter. Does that sound good?
The only other thing I was going to say, and this will be quick, is just that this chapter is just a good reminder that I think Isaac Hempstead Wright did an awesome job as Bran, especially young Bran. I just loved him. I feel like I couldn't think, like, it's exactly how I envision it in the books. And I think in the show, he did a really great job of portraying that character. And I know sometimes he's under a lot of heat for his like acting abilities, but I think he did a great job, and I'm a huge fan. So that's all.
No, yeah, like you said, especially young Bran. Mm-hmm. I think he killed it.
I love him impressive. In the first few seasons. So good.
Mm-hmm. I agree. 100% agree. All right, cool. Well, we're going to move on to chapter 25, which is Eddard's fifth chapter, and I'll read the summary here. Ned makes a visit to Maester Pycelle and questions him on the death of Jon Arryn. After Jon Arryn did some research in a book about the lineages of the great houses, he fell rather ill rather quickly, but was able to mutter the words, "The seed is strong," as his final words. Ned leaves, asking Pycelle if he could see the book that Jon Arryn was reading, but he's still suspicious of Pycelle. And Pycelle's like, "Yeah, I'll find it and I'll deliver it to you," which that's a whole other thing. But on his way back to his room, he runs into Arya, who is practicing her balance. She asks of Bran and his future, and then about her own. Ned tells her that she will one day grow up and marry a lord and have sons who will live great lives. She disregards this and returns to her training. He meets Winterfell in his room, and he speaks to four people who are in the service of Jon Arryn just before he died, and says, like, hey, these people are still hanging around King's Landing. You can question them. Ned suggests they come to him here at the Tower of the Hand so he can question them, but Littlefinger then points out that many spies were keeping an eye on him and suggests that Ned send someone he trusts to speak to them as a liaison. So you all right, Madison?
Yeah, I'm coming right back.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. Brooke, so what did you think about this chapter?
There was nothing like too terribly exciting in this chapter. It was a good Ned and Arya's little conversation was a nice kind of reprieve from like the sadness that we had at the end of Bran's chapter. But I don't know, it was a good chapter. I mean, there wasn't anything wrong with it. I just didn't find it too terribly exciting.
Yeah, no, I agree. I will say though, I appreciate that little break in the middle with Arya as well, especially after you spent some time with Pycelle, who's just
yeah, I know.
Just so you know, he gets creepier as the books go on. Okay. And see, you have to spend time with him, and you're just like, man, this guy's shady, and I don't know what you're doing, and oh god. And then you get Arya, and you're like, this is nice. And then you're like, oh, Littlefinger. Like, I think it does actually kind of puts us in the shoes of Ned Stark. You know, like, I don't know.
Like,
I feel
up,
like we have
down.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, I have to deal with this. Oh, my family, I love them. Oh god, Littlefinger won't leave me alone. Just get me out of here. So, I thought that was a cool thing. Madison, what did you think about this chapter?
So, first and foremost, I am so grossed out at the idea of drinking iced milk with honey.
Oh, I know.
Are you serious? Okay. Yeah. Okay, just so you know, I'm going to highly object, and I'm going to lick a recipe of that up and eat it and drink it.
Yeah,
because,
no, next episode, you better have some ice melted honey.
I will try, because, just so you know, I am slightly an old, very old person at heart. Every now and then, I'll stay up a little late, and I'm like, you know what I need? A cup of warm milk and a little bit of honey, and I'll sit there and drink it and be like, this is so nice, and I'll watch the news or something, or pull out the newspaper, and I'm sitting there reading, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm like 70 years old, like, this is ridiculous. But no, like, seriously.
It's for.
No, I love hot milk and honey. It is so dang tasty.
Try ice. Yeah, try ice. Maybe it's your thing.
I don't like milk in general, so this whole idea is just not going for me. I'm sorry to tell you.
That's just fine. continue, Madison. Do you have something else?
Oh, just a few thoughts. I did look up the definition of craven, because it's brought up in this chapter, and then it's brought up several times in the next chapter. And George has words that he loves, and craven is one of them. You'll find that a lot of these authors, they have words that they like to reuse a lot. But craven, by definition, is contemptibly. So contemptibly. Mm-hmm. Lacking in courage and cowardly. So contemptibly, lacking in courage, cowardly. So we know that, what is it? Women, cravens, and eunuchs prefer poison.
Oh my gosh. I will say, I cannot believe how much shade that Pycelle throws at Varys.
It's like he's just like, hey, want to talk about Varys? Like, he's looking for someone to be like, oh yeah, OMG, I hate him too.
it was just so how like heavy-handed it was. He was like, oh yeah, eunuchs do poison. Huh, did you know Varys doesn't have a dick? Like, isn't that interesting? Hint, hint. Like, I don't know. I think it really shows us how bad Pycelle is at scheming.
Yeah. It's like he's him in the hallway. It's like going up to anyone who will listen and be like, hey, so Varys, you know he doesn't have a dick, right? Like, you can he just seems like a massive gossip.
Well, no, seriously, like...
Well, and I just think it's funny, too, because he basically is like, oh, no, I don't think John Arryn was poisoned. And then all of a sudden when Ned's like, oh, poison is a woman's weapon, he's like, oh, it's also a eunuch's weapon, Varys. And it's like, but you just said that John Arryn wasn't poisoned, so what do you believe?
Pretty much. Well, it's, oh my gosh. Okay, so just a quick little timeline of events here. So basically John Arryn's plotting, you know, he's basically trying to figure out the lineage of the great houses, and event, and I don't know if he, I'm not sh- no 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 he must have figured it out. He basically figures out about the twincest, about Jaime and Cersei having, you know, being together and having Robert's kids, basically. And what I just find interesting is that, so John Arryn's poisoned, Pycelle arrives, and Pycelle is he's loyal to the Lannisters all the way. So basically, we learn later on that in Clash of Kings that basically Pycelle arrives there and is like, hey, I think Cersei's going to want Jaime Arryn dead, so I'm just going to let him die. But it, I don't know, it just doesn't really make a lot of sense that he would do that. And then he's like, oh, hey, I let Jaime Arryn die for the Lannisters because he found out this secret, and now I'm going to give the book that Jaime Arryn used to figure this out to Ned. Because Ned eventually gets this book.
Right.
And it just really emphasized how bad he is at scheming and conspiracy. Like, he's on the Lannister's side, but he's, I don't know, it's just so strange
to
me.
Well, he's very contradictory, because I'm trying to find the spot, but in the beginning of the chapter, he says, like, oh, you have to forgive me, a mind is like a sword. It goes to rust when it gets old. And then later in the chapter, he's like, well, listen, I'm old, so I know everything. And I'm like, so which is it?
No, he's really infuriating. Like, I'll be honest. So, like, when the chapter starts, he's talking about, I don't know, he's just kind of rambling about things. And I honestly think what happened was Ned showed up, and he's like, okay, well, I got to figure out my story, so I'm just going to talk until I can figure it out.
Mm-hmm. And distract.
Yeah, basically, I'm just going to talk and talk, and like, okay, I'm going to blame Varys. Okay, that's my plan.
It's like maybe he'll get so frustrated with how annoying I am that he'll just leave before he gets any information.
Right. And that basically, by the way, that just basically covers my first discussion question was just what are your thoughts on Picel and like why did he give Ned the book? And yeah, I think he's just a really bad schemer. One thing that I actually really liked especially in this section was how uncomfortable Ned is. And I just like how George just kind of emphasized that. He's talking about how Ned is wearing silks now instead of like, you know, the furs of the North
and
how
like it's sticking to him because it's so hot.
It's hot out. And it specifically talks about how Ned is like uncomfortable in the heat, which really makes sense. I mean, he lived up in the North where it was crazy cold. And then, I don't know. I just really liked, they bring the iced honey milk and he drinks it and he's like, oh, that's too sweet for me. I don't know. It just felt a little
nothing
like
nothing makes this man happy at this point. Like,
right? Yeah. He's just so out of his normal that he just like nothing is, you know, clicking right. And, just back onto the sweetness of the milk. I think that might've been just a little hint that Picel is lying to him, you know, like Picel's kind of like sugarcoating everything and trying to put out all this, you know, all this stuff. And Ned's just not having any of it. Okay, cool. So our next scene is with Ned and Arya. And Arya's practicing her water dancing. And she ends up asking about Bran and what he's able, you know, what's going to become of him. What did you guys think about this scene? Like, what do you think Grimm's trying to tell us about this world based on this conversation? Madison, did you have a thought on that?
I mean, I liked the parallel that was drawn between just balancing in general. Mm-hmm. Like, she's learning early on that, you know, everything may not be what it seems, and it's all just about, you know, balance. It's about a little bit, you know, a little bit of good and a little bit of bad. And I don't know. I just saw maybe some parallels between, like, the literal balance she's doing and she's learning about mm-hmm. the figurative balance that's all around her in King's Landing.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Brooke, did you have any thoughts about this section?
I had said that I felt like Grimm was showing us that the world, their world, traditionally runs on, like, you know, the very traditional roles. The ladies grow up to marry the men and they go off and have children. But the fact that after Arya corrects Ned and Ned just like gives up, like he's not trying to fight her anymore. He's just like, oh, okay, that's what you think. I feel like it shows that the Stark children, at least, are really going to challenge the traditional roles in this uh-huh. show. Like, you know, Sansa becomes queen. She doesn't need no man. And Arya definitely doesn't need a man. You know what I mean? So I feel like it's a show that the Starks, at least, are going to challenge those traditional roles in the world.
Mm-hmm. No, I love it. Good thought.
And someone posted a meme today in the group that was just a picture of Ned and Arya and Needle, and it was just saying that because one father really fostered his kids' strengths and encouraged her to follow her passions versus, you know, conforming her to social norms, like, you know, she ended up saving the world. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a touching little picture showing that, you know, like, as parents, it's our job to feed into what comes natural to our children and encourage them to follow their hearts and their strengths and stuff like that versus conform them to what, you know, society says. And it was a touching little meme. And then I was like, oh, that goes perfectly, you know, with the last chapter where he assigns her to Sirio and, you know, finds Needle, but also to this chapter where he kind of tries to be like, oh, well, Arya, you know, you're going to be a lady, you're going to marry, you know, a lord. And she reminds him, she's like, no, that's not me. You know, kind of that's not me again. And I was like, oh, that's a good nod to that meme. So if you guys scroll through the Addicts page, you'll find that. I don't remember who posted it, but it was a good meme. And just him kind of, you know, catching himself or reminding him. He's like, no, you know what? You're right. Like, you know, that's not you.
Yeah. No, love it. I just, the big thing that really hit me in this section of this chapter was, so basically, you know, Arya's like, so what's going to happen to Bran? Like, is he going to be a knight? Is he going to, you know, so on and so forth. And he's like, no, he won't become a knight. He won't, you know, he's not going to, you know, have children. This isn't going to happen to him, but he could, you know, build ships. He could join the faith and become a high septon. He could sit on the council and so on and so forth. And then, so that happens. And then Arya's like, so, well, can I do those things? And it's just, it kind of just made my heart fell when he's like, well, no, like, you won't be doing that. And it just kind of, you know, it just emphasized like, okay, like a male has more, a crippled male still has more opportunities than any woman,
mm-hmm.
like at all, you know, it's just really a nice way. It's just a way that Grimm shows us like, hey, this is the world it's going to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And especially talking about Arya, who doesn't want to be that way. And I don't know, it's kind of hard to imagine her being that way. And I think it's a way for him to show us like, hey, she's going to go off and do some pretty intense things that aren't, you know, traditional.
Yeah, and it's especially nice with hindsight to see that like his daughters really changed the social norm and in like a really mm-hmm. cool way. You know, she has an armada and she's an explorer. Like that's, you know, that's pretty freaking badass. And it was exactly what she kind of hinted at in this scene. So
mm-hmm.
pretty cool.
Perfect. Let's see. Then Ned heads up to his Solar and he runs into Littlefinger, which I'm sure he's not very excited about. So let me ask you this, guys. I'm curious if you think this way. So basically, Littlefinger's like, hey, I got some contacts for you that were involved with Jon Arryn. And Ned's like, all right, cool. I'll order them to come here. Littlefinger's like, nah, just so you know. See that guy out there? He's spying on you. See that guy? He works for Cersei. See that person? Works for Varys. Do you think Littlefinger's lying to Ned right now about these spies? No? You got a no from Brooke?
No, I don't think so. He's always so blatantly obvious and just nobody pays attention to a word that he says. And
that's a good defense. I like it. I like it.
The only way I would say he is lying is because they are his spies rather than Varys's and Cersei's.
I like that. Madison, did you have a thought?
So I think that he either is not lying and is just being blatantly truthful, or he's just pointing out random people to make his point. Like, he's like, I don't know for sure that that's Varys' spy or that's Cersei's spy, but I know for sure that it could be. Like, I think he's just making a point. Like, Ned, you have no clue what goes on here, so let me lay it out for you. There are spies everywhere. Your every move is being watched. So I think if he is lying, it's just to prove the same point, that it doesn't really make a difference one way or the other. Like, he's just trying to say, dude, like, this is King's Landing 101. Like, you can't have people come into your room. There's eyes everywhere. So I think mm-hmm. he's just making a point. Whether those are actually so-and-so's spy, you know, I don't think it matters. He's just making his point.
Mm-hmm. No, I like it. That was, yeah, no, my thought's kind of lame now, but.
Let's hear it.
It does take a little future reading of the books to know this, but Cersei actually doesn't have a lot of spies on her side. Because we actually get into her perspective, like we read a point of view chapters from her, which is really intense, by the way. It's very interesting to read into her thoughts. But just through all those chapters, she doesn't really have people coming to report on what's going on in King's Landing. And then just this line I thought was just kind of interesting. He points out all the people who are spying on him, and it says, Eddard Stark had no taste for these intrigues. Seven hells, he swore. It did seem as though the man on the wall is watching him. Suddenly uncomfortable, Ned moved away from the window. And I think it was just kind of like a confirmation to himself. Like he basically convinced himself that person was watching him. And I think Littlefinger's goal was just like, I need to make Ned paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
And his end goal was that Ned wouldn't order these people to come to him. Littlefinger basically wants Ned to send out his other people to go talk to these people. Because it would just slow down progress a lot more. And especially with Sir Hugh, Ned sends Jory Cassell to go get him. And Sir Hugh was like, oh, well, if Ned wants, you know, if the hand wants to talk to me, then he can come and talk to me himself, or he can give me an official order. And I just find it interesting that if Ned didn't take Littlefinger's advice and he sent an official order to Sir Hugh to come to the tower and so he could speak before he gets killed, I think Sir Hugh would have came, because it's like, okay, the Hand of the King wants to talk to me instead of this lackey that he sent me. So I don't know. I kind of liked your guys' reasoning a little more. I think that is totally something Littlefinger would do. It would just be blatantly obvious to the point where people wouldn't believe him. You know, he's like, yeah, those are spies. And everyone's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
and I think his goal is always to leave the people he's talking to with a big question mark over their head. Where mm-hmm. they're like, okay, that's totally plausible, but it could be a lie also. Is he telling the truth? Is he telling a lie? Like, his goal is to constantly cause, let's all say it together now, chaos.
Chaos.
Yeah.
We did it.
And so, like, when he tells a lie, it's supposed to sound like the truth. When he tells the truth, it could be a lie. Mm. And so I think it does, and I think in this case, I think he's telling the truth, but it may not all be true, but it's plausible enough that he's just going to go ahead and leave Ned with that, like, well, I mean, that makes sense. I better follow through with that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, hey, do you guys have any other thoughts on this chapter before we head to the next one?
So my only last thought is just feeding off of the last chapter. When Ned leaves Pycelle's like, hey, Ned, is there anything I can do for you? Ned could have been like, yeah, send a raven back to Winterfell and tell Bran I got his letter.
Oh, God. Yeah. Here's a letter, like, send it to my son. Oh,
you're
my
maester.
Yeah, right. Also, I forgot to mention this. I want to say I feel like John Arryn could have just been a little more clear on his final words. You know?
Like, it's just as easy to say your children are illegitimate than it is to say the seed is strong. Like, come on, John Arryn. It's Why like, you got to be so cryptic?
Well, that's the thing, like even the poison, so it's the Tears of Lys that are used to kill him, and nowhere in the books does it describe it as being a hallucinogen or, like, make, you know, takes a tear on his mind or anything like that, so it's like,
He gave him the milk of poppy, remember? He said he gave him the milk of poppy towards the end.
Oh, that's true,
which is a hallucinogen. But I think it's funny, too, where he, like, lists off all of his side effects, and it's like, poison, 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 and Ned's like, could it have been poison? And Pycelle's like, nope.
Yeah,
no, I don't think so.
Right.
And Ned's like, okay.
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh. Yeah, Pycelle's a freaking creep. Yeah. Goes away. All right, cool. Well,
every time they talk about him, I just see him stretching. That's all I can think about.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so old, you know.
Yeah. My shirt is so short. That scene.
I don't know. Just every. Sorry to keep going on this Pycelle thing, but every time we get to Pycelle, I always remember, like, oh yeah, when we first met him, it talked about all the chains and the maester training he had, and you know, he's so far above any other maester in terms of his education, and he's just an idiot. Like, it's just it's just so strange to me.
Yes, and I've gone on this rant like 3 times now about his maester chain compared to other maester chains, mm-hmm. and once again, they called his chain jeweled in this chapter.
So yeah, it could be a glamour.
And like Luwens and Aemons are never described as having jewels.
Right, and even Luwens is described as very tight around his throat, mm-hmm. which means it's short. He doesn't have as much training as Pycelle or Aemon does. So once again, that's just another emphasis of, like, okay, Pycelle should be a pretty dang smart dude. Like,
well, just because you have passed a lot of courses and read a lot of books does not mean you are smart.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. Well, cool. Well, hey, why don't we travel from King's Landing up to the wall?
To the wall.
To the wall. And so
to the window.
So it's sad, but I don't know that song. I've been out of music. For
you
a long
knew
time.
It enough to know that it was a song, though.
I do know it's a song, but I can.
And don't feel bad. It's literally from, like, what, 14 years ago or something now.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know what happened.
We old.
I used to be really into music. I used to listen to a ton of it. And then there was just this point in my life where I stopped for some reason, and I just never caught back up. So, but
having kids.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm shocked I can do this live show with you guys with my kids. All right, so we are on chapter 26, which is John's 4th chapter. And here's the chapter summary. So as John is training a new he's helping out the other members of the Night's Watchers training with him. Samwell Tarly shows up. And let's just say at a first glance, you can tell he's not cut out for the Night's Watch, and he is not happy to be there. Sir Alistair Thorne puts him into the training, and he is beaten very quickly and very violently under Thorne's orders. John Pip and Gren step up to defend him and successfully do so. After training, we get to learn what happens on an everyday basis at Castle Black, the types of chores John does, and things like that. John takes Sam out to the dining hall and out of the dining hall, and they talk. We get a little backstory on Sam. Talks about how his father basically expected him to grow up to be a great warrior, to be, you know, worthy of, you know, wielding Heartsbane and, you know, being lord of his land, his land of Horn Hill. And Sam did not live up to this expectation and proceeds and. Wow, I wrote this summary really bad. But Randall Tarly basically goes through all these steps. He hires all these different master at arms to train him, to try and make him a man. He hires these people from Karth to come and do like a bloodbath sacrifice things so that he can grow strong, which is really strange. and then eventually, Randall Tarly has another son who's more in line with what he wants. And he eventually tells Sam, like, hey, basically, you're going to go join the Night's Watch, or I'm going to kill you, and I will lie to your mother about it. And so Sam is sent up to the Night's Watch, and John basically takes some pity on him, becomes his friend, and convinces all the other trainees to not, you know, beat up on Sam during training. And Sam's just really grateful for that, basically. And just a nice touching moment at the end where, you know, Sam basically is like, I never had a friend before. Thank you for being my friend. And John's like, no, we're brothers, man. Like, I don't know. What's really interesting about this chapter is, I don't want this to sound too negative, but it was probably the most predictable chapter that I've ever read. Like, as soon as Sam showed up, I probably could have wrote out myself, like, okay, this is going to happen, then this will happen, and then this will happen, like in general strokes. Mm-hmm. But it was still like a nice, heartwarming, well-written chapter to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is another one that I think translated really well to the show. You really got how heartbreaking that story was about him telling about his dad. And it's funny because you don't actually meet Randall Tarly till much later on in the show, and you almost forget about like what a dick he is. You just think, oh, this guy's like curmudgeon or whatever, but you forget that he's like an extremely abusive, like evil person, like horrible. And also it's interesting to think too that like all of this happened to Sam before he was 14. Like he literally grew up on him. So young. I'm trying to think. The only thing I thought would have been cool is if in the show I wish we would have had like a montage scene showing all those new recruits from the Night's Watch doing all the different chores, kind of like trying out the different jobs. I feel like if they gave us like 3.5 minutes of Sam at the Citadel cleaning out chamber pots. That went on for far too long. Like I think it would have been cute and cool and like a kind of a fun.
It's like a nice world building
scene to have the new recruits showing them doing all the different jobs at the wall to kind of show what life was like on the wall besides, you know, just the bad parts. So I wish we would have gotten to see that, but I liked that we got it in the books. But no, I think it was a great, I mean, like you said, it's not the most action-packed. It's not the most, like, shocking or, you know, turns and twists. But I do like how it jumps straight to, like, last we saw John, he realized that he's a bully and nobody likes him. And it doesn't really give you much of anything in between that, because now everyone kind of has his respect. Not everyone, but, he has friends, he has allies. But it's nice because I appreciate that Grimm did not waste our time with that, because we didn't need to know that. All we know now is that John realized it, he made some changes, he's earned respect. So I kind of appreciate that we didn't have to go through that whole, like, and then he made this friend, and then he made this friend.
Right.
Like, now we just know that he's kind of the man, and everyone respects him, and he helps, you know, he helps out, and, you know, people listen to what he says. So I thought that was kind of cool that you know, we only mm-hmm. he only tells us what we need to know, and I like that. I respect that.
That is very much his style. Like, I've talked about this probably every show. Like, you know, he likes to jump forward ahead in time, and sometimes he'll catch us up, like with Danny's chapters. He'll be like, hey, we're going to jump ahead, and I'm just going to tell you what happened kind of in memory, in the narration. Right. Yeah. But then you get chapters like this where it's like, you know what, we're just going to jump ahead, and we're not going to stress about what happened in between, because nothing very excited happened. It was just kind of growing, and I could show you the end result instead of showing how
and
it grew.
We do kind of know what happened. It's just from that paragraph about their kind of training in the different trades, we do know their days are very predictable, they're very redundant, they're repetitive, they mm-hmm. train with swords in the morning and then they do chores. Like, there's no need to go into it because it is what it is. It's pretty mundane there at the wall mm-hmm. for now.
Most definitely. I don't know, this chapter's really rough. I feel like we get the story of Randall Tarley, which we'll talk about a little later, but then we also get Sir Alistair, who's just being an absolute asshole.
That's my first note. Sir Alistair is such an ass. Like, that's my first note of the whole chapter.
No, okay. So here's just a little thing I noticed that emphasizes that not only is he a total dick, but he's also a very bad trainer. Like, the very first line in the chapter. Here, I'm gonna read it because it's short and it's just right here. If I can find, okay, Ja was showing Darian how best to deliver a side stroke when the new recruit entered the practice yard. So, I don't know, like, I'm not a swordsman, I don't know anything about it, but John's teaching this recruit how to do a side stroke, and it's like, okay, that's not like a special cool move, that's a very basic thing, and it's like, really, Alistair Thorne? One of your recruits has to teach the other recruit how to do a very basic thing, and it just kind of makes me mad. It's just like, dude,
and it makes Sir Alistair mad. Yeah, and it makes Sir Alistair mad when John tries to teach anybody anything, and it's like, you're not helping yourself.
It's like, which is it? Are you going to be mad that you have this big hotshot that's trying to help everybody and teach everybody, or are you going to just sit back and let him? Because it kind of sounds like you're just going to sit back and let him.
Pretty much. And, I mean, God, it's so. I had a college teacher who was similar to this, and it's just bringing up bad memories. And yeah, just his treatment of Sam is just straight up terrible. I mean,
like, poor Sam cannot escape the abuse, because what Sir Alistair put him through is just, it's inexcusable. Like, it's not cool at all.
I know.
I mean, they beat him bloody.
Right? And especially just like our introduction to Sam. I liked how he comes into the training yard and he's like, oh, hey, I'm supposed to be here for training. And then it specifically says he said to no one in particular. And I feel like that really shows who he is. He's like, he doesn't have confidence to talk to anyone specifically about this. He's just like, I'm just going to say it in the air and hopefully someone will respond to me.
Yeah.
And then later on, he actually says, I don't mean to be the way I am. And it's so sad to hear Sam just beat himself up, basically. Like, he hates himself, basically.
Well, and Sir Alistair, too, going back to Sir Alistair being such an ass, like, Sam's a big boy, and he brought armor to fit him, and Sir Alistair's like, nope, it's not black, you better go find something else. So they have to pull apart everything else to make something for him, you know? It just made Sam that much lower than all the other recruits who were there.
Right? I mean, I'm sure Donald Noy wasn't happy about it. I mean, he's like, great, okay, I got to tear apart all these things just because he needs a black, you know, a black outfit.
Yeah,
I'm sure
when he probably had the nicest armor of anyone there.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah, no, I legitimately think he did that just to humiliate him.
Yeah,
just to humiliate him more. And he just needs to go away. he really just needs to go away.
I know.
Let's see. Also during that scene, I just found it, I don't know, there was just a lot of little hints of John's friendship and like brotherlyhood with all the Night's Watch. There was a lot of hints towards it, especially when it comes to, Halder, I think was his name, or was it Darian? Just kind of, one of the Night's Watch members who's not really a big point of the story, but one part of it was when Sir Alistair sends the three after Sam, and Sam, Gren, and Pip get up and defend, and they end up winning. I think it's Halder. He gets up and he's like, "Oh man, I almost had you, John. Like, I could have took you out. I was so close." And I'm like, okay, that shows that there's some trust, that there's a friendship there, because if there wasn't, Halder probably would have got up and be like, I'm going to beat your ass, dude. I can't believe you humiliated me that way. Mm-hmm. And then when he's, I don't know, I think it was a little cheesy in my opinion, but like when he's kind of getting all the guys together and he's like, all right, we're not going to fight against Sam. There's a couple characters he mentions that he's like, oh, I'm kind of shocked that this guy would agree with me to not hurt Sam. And once again, I think that just emphasized that, like, hey, like, there's some bonds growing between these people. Right. Let's see. So let's talk about Randall Tarley. So how terrible is Randall Tarley on a scale
terrible,
of
terrible human being.
I think he's an underrated villain on this show, like, or the books or whatever. Again, because it doesn't really affect the story, but, like, mm-hmm. he's right up there with some of the real bad baddies. Like, that's a mean dude.
It was pretty terrible. I mean, let's see. Like, okay.
Yeah.
So one of it was, by the way, so just going into the story of it, first it goes through, like, what Randall Tarley wanted Sam to be, then it talks about what Sam is, and I liked how it was like, oh, Sam, he loved dancing and kittens and dressing in fine clothes. I don't know, I like the addition of kittens that you really kittens.
I know. It reminds me of your kitten story.
Yeah.
You're right?
Kindred spirits.
That was a very magical moment for me. But, the line that really emphasized it to me that he's a terrible person was, so Sam, he only grew fatter and more frightened until Lord Randall's disappointment turned to anger and then it turned into loathing. So what I think that tells us is, like, eventually Randall Tarley almost enjoyed abusing his son.
Yep.
You know, like, first he was like, man, he's not who I want him to be. I'm pissed off that you're not who I want to be. And then he just hit this point where he hates him so much that he probably goes out of his way to find ways to abuse Sam. And it's so bad. Like, it's probably the most toxic masculinity thing I've ever read. You know what I mean?
It's interesting, too, because, like, especially in the show, we see how his mom, I think her name is Melissa Tarley, maybe. It doesn't matter. She kind of stands up to Randall. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder how that all went down when Sam was like, well, guess what? Big news, joining the Night's Watch. I'm surprised she wasn't like, interesting. Your dad didn't have anything to do with this, because she in the show, and she's just such a wonderful lady. Like, you just love her so much, and it shows that, like, Randall must have some love in his heart for her, or at least some serious respect, because, like, he's like, listen, I'm doing this for your mother. And then in the show, when she's like telling him to shape up at dinner, he kind of listens to her. And so, like, I wonder how that whole thing went down when at home. I'm like, what was it like there at the Tarley household when Sam and his dad came and told everyone that he was joining the Night's Watch? Like, how did that get past her? Like, how did she just be like, okay, see you, son? You know, like, is it not a thing in their culture where a firstborn son can decline the inheritance or pass it to the next? Like, why couldn't he have just joined why couldn't he have gone to the Citadel and joined, like, become a maester?
That's what I said.
Well, because that's not what Randall Tarley wants him to become.
Right, but why not? Like, what's the matter? He's still gone. Yeah, he's still
got another title.
It's more of a, I would put it in line. Yeah, no, like Brooke said, like, that means he's still his son. He's put in a bad mark on the Tarley family name. And Randall Tarley isn't going to have any of that. Like, if you're not a man's man, if you don't know how to use a sword, then you're not worth, you know, piss to me.
Right. It seems like the what's it called? What are the maesters called? It's not like a brotherhood, but whatever. The order of the maesters.
Yeah,
order of
the maesters, yeah.
It's almost kind of like a different version of the Night's Watch, where they give up their claims to titles and names and stuff, don't they? I mean, they can't marry. They can't father children. Can they?
No, they can't get married and father children, as far as I remember.
So it seems like,
I don't think they give up their name, though.
No, they don't give up their name, but they don't have any lordship. Like, they don't have any holds. Mm-hmm. So it seems like, as far as his goals go, it would still meet mm-hmm. his requirement, but it wouldn't humiliate him.
That's what it comes down to.
The abuse. It wouldn't humiliate him. It wouldn't reduce him to nothing. He would still be giving Sam what he ultimately wanted. And I guess that wouldn't suffice a what's the word I'm looking for? He's a sociopath.
No, that's probably close. I mean, that's terrible. I mean, he's fortunately, honestly, we don't see very much of him, but when we do, he's still, oh my gosh. Like I said, he's a very underrated villain in my opinion.
Yes.
Let's see. Do you guys need to vent any more about Randall Tarley?
I think I'm okay for now.
Yeah. To me, he's like the Reach's version of like Roose Bolton and Walder Frey. Like every region has their like own gross bad guy. Mm-hmm. And he's the Reach's version of Walder and Roose. Like, ew, bad guy.
No, I agree. Let's see. The last discussion question I had for the chapter was just to talk about John's dream that he has here. I'll go through and read it. I might skip over just a few little sections here, but it says John says, "Sometimes I dream about it. I'm walking down this long empty hall. My voice echoes all around and no one answers. So I walk faster, opening doors, shouting names. I don't even know who I'm looking for. Most nights it's my father, but sometimes it's Rob instead, or my little sister Arya, or my uncle. Sam asks, "Do you ever find anyone in your dreams?" John says, John shook his head. "No one. The castle's always empty." He never told anyone of the dream, and he did not understand why he was telling Sam now, except that it felt good to talk of it. Even the ravens are gone from the rookery, and the stables are full of bones. That always scares me. I start to run then, throwing open doors, climbing the tower three steps at a time, screaming for someone, for anyone. And then I find myself in front of the door, a door to the crypts. It's black inside, and I can see the steps spiraling down. Somehow I know I have to go down there, but I don't want to. I'm afraid of what might be waiting for me. The old kings of winter are down there, sitting on their thrones with stone wolves at their feet and iron swords across their laps. But it's not them I'm afraid of. I scream that I'm not a Stark, that this isn't my place, but it's no good. I have to go anyway. So I start down, feeling the walls as I descend, with no torch to light the way. It gets darker and darker until I want to scream. That's when I always wake. So what do you guys think about that dream? What do you think it means? Any thoughts, Brooke, that you want to share?
The beginning of it kind of just made me feel like John feels cut off from his family. That's why he can't ever find anyone, and the whole castle's empty. Like, he never really felt part of the Stark family anyways, thanks to Catelyn. And, you know, he felt like, until he came to the Night's Watch, he felt like he didn't have a family. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end, I feel like the fact that it leads him to the crypts and it's dark is just kind of like showing that the secret to John's parentage is hidden down in the crypts with Lyanna's bones and Ned's bones when he ends up down there. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got to there, because until we get to later where Sam and Gilly are in the Citadel and they read it in the book about Rhaegar and Lyanna, and Bran sees it with his abilities, like, the only people who know about John's true parentage are Lyanna, his mother, and Ned. So, and their secrets are down there in the crypts, mm-hmm. and nobody's going to get to them, so.
No, I like it. Yeah, a lot of people believe that in Lyanna's tomb is maybe, like, Rhaegar's harp, maybe her birthing blanket, just some hint that's going to reveal John's parentage. Madison, did you have anything else you wanted to add to that?
There's a lot of really, really good fan theories about secrets to John's parentage being hidden in the crypts of Winterfell. That's not what today is about, though. okay, so in my mind, I think it's interesting that both Ned and Rob end up in the crypts. We assume that Rob's bones maybe probably don't, but either way, he would still have a, you know, I think also it's interesting that there is reference to the sword across the lap and the wolf at the feet, just like in the chapter before. It was in a literal sense. You know, Rob had his sword in his lap and a wolf at his feet. I think that more than anything, though, it's just his dreams letting him know that his business in Winterfell is not done, that he'll be back in Winterfell, and it holds some significance to him still. Because in his mind at this point, for all he knows, like, that chapter of his life is over. But it's his subconscious, or his, you know, prophetic dreams of, you know, letting him know that his time in Winterfell, his business in Winterfell, is not over, and there is still significance for him in the North.
Now, honestly, just to go along with that, I think, because as it notes, he's descending down into the crypts, and eventually that's when he wakes up, before he enters the crypt. So I think we will get a scene in the books where we're basically going to finish this dream. He's going to get to Winterfell. He's going to go down to the crypts, and then we're going to see the resolution of what would happen if the dream continued. I don't know. I think part of this whole dream is just a hint that he's not a Stark. He can't find any of his family because they aren't his family. Mm-hmm. You know, he's running through the halls screaming for them, and they're not coming because they're not, you know, a part of him or something along with those lines. Let's see. That's all the discussion questions I have. Did you guys have any other things you wanted to add before we wrap up? I have one fan theory that's been disproved, but it's still interesting to talk about. But did you guys have anything you wanted to add?
I love the way that he described, I forget his name now, but his singing voice, he described it as honey poured over thunder. Like, as soon as you read that, you think, like, that is, like, the coolest sounding voice, like, honey poured over thunder. Like, I wonder who that sounds like now that's on the radio. And then, of course, the hilarious humor that they threw in with, like, you say, like, piss over farts or something. It's just funny because at first you're like, honey poured over thunder. You're like, that is so eloquent. Like, that's, wow, yeah, that sounds great. Like, and then it comes right in with piss over farts. I laughed out loud.
I did too.
Yeah, no, that's an all-time.
Gotta love the humor.
Pretty much. Let's see. Here's a hint towards a fan theory that isn't around anymore. The theory was that that Jon's true parentage is actually Ned Stark and Ashara Dane, and it's still an interesting way to hint at it. So when Jon is standing up for Sam, and Alistair is sending these three guys at him, Pip and Gren stand up to help defend. And what's interesting about it is that this actually reflects the three Kingsguard who were defending the Tower of Joy Ned and his group arrived. So the way it works is that Pip is described in this chapter as having the ears of a bat, which reflects onto one of the Kingsguard was Oswell Wentz, and House Wentz sigil is a flock of bats, basically. So there's a connection there. Gren is described as an aurochs throughout the whole books as long as he is alive, which is basically a bull. And that reflects onto Gerald Hightower, who's another one of the Kingsguard, and he was called the White Bull. And a lot of people thought that, like, okay, like, that's there. That means that Jon would be a Dane because he would represent the other third Kingsguard. Now, we know that's not true, but it's still something. I don't know. I feel like all these fan theories are important to the history of these books because they've been around so long, and it's huge. Like, to be a real fan of these books, I think you got to dive into the theories. And so I think that was just some cool little evidence that was there for a while until we got the answer that, you know, who's Jon's parents really were. I can't remember where it is in the chapter, but I found it kind of funny that Sam's asking everybody's names, and Pip introduces Jon. It's like, oh, this one's Lord Snow, and then he says, you don't want to know what his mother calls him. And then I was reading that, and I was like, well, yeah, I do. Yeah. Like, you know, like, because Jon's true name was a huge theory for a long time.
Right.
What his true name was, and it was, I don't know. I feel like that was Grimm almost teasing us, like, oh, you don't want to know that, and it's like. Yes, I do.
That was an honest whisper, you know?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. So that's all I have. Did I have? No, that is all I had.
And again, kind of same thing I said last chapter when we were wrapping it up, but another huge bravo to John Bradley, because Like, can you imagine anyone more perfect to play Samwell Tarly? I mean, the scene was the first, because he came straight from, like, traditional formal theater school. And this was his first scene ever as a working actor. Like, he was in theater school, and then he auditioned, he got this part, and the scene in the courtyard with the sword fighting was the first paid acting job he ever had. And, like, he just does such a great job. Like, I mean, he got the piggy squeal down. I love him as Samwell Tarly. Like, what an iconic character.
Well, what I really like about him as, you know, playing Samwell Tarly is I like kind of the sass he brings to Sam. Like, yeah, sometimes Sam does some things that you're just like, I can't believe he just said that. Like, he totally just said that.
He's so cute because he knows it. Like, he, like, thinks about it first. And he's like, oh, this will be funny. I should say it. So he says it and then, like, waits for a response. Brilliant.
That's so true. And, well, what's really cool about in this chapter, we actually get a little bit of that when John's like, hey, why don't we go outside and talk? Have you seen the wall? And Sam's like, it's 700 feet. Of course, yeah. I've seen the wall.
He's like, I'm not blind.
I'm fat, not blind. I was like, you know what? That's probably like, that was like some inspiration for the actor to like glean off of.
Yes. I love it.
The only other thing I had about this chapter was you can tell what kind of character Sam is going to be, because so far, he's the only character other than John that Ghost actually likes and doesn't attack. So
that was a pretty sweet moment. You know what I mean? Like, it was just kind of interesting. Like, it's like, that's exactly what Sam needed. He needed a little lightness in his life at that moment. And, you know, I feel like that's kind of a connection. I think that kind of shows up the connection between John and Ghost. Is John's like, okay, I need to cheer this dude up. And then Ghost is like, I got you. You can't live his face, but I'll
John is kind of oblivious sometimes. And so, like, it says, like, John didn't know what to do, but Ghost did. Like, I do. I feel like it's his subconscious being like, oh, come on, brother. I got you. Like, yeah, do me a hug. Come on. Are you that dense?
Perfect. Well, if we don't have any other thoughts, then I guess we're wrapped up for the night. I unfortunately won't be here next episode. I'm going to be out of town at my cousin's wedding. But I'm sure Madison and Brooke will keep you guys entertained and interested. I'm just so you guys know, I'm actually very jealous of the next chapters you're going to discuss that I won't be here for.
I gotta look ahead. What are we
doing? I know, I didn't even look.
Yeah, so just a quick little summary of it. We're going to be, so the next chapters we're going to be reading are chapter 27, 28, 29.
Ooh, the hand's turny.
Yeah. You guys are going to talk about, John's going to go visit, you guys get to see Gendry for the first time, so you guys can ogle and have your little man crush episode. after that, Catelyn captures Tyrion, which is a huge, huge turning point in the books, and then the Hand's tourney in Sansa 2. So, like I said, I'm sure you two will keep
some good stuff.
Well, awesome, guys. Like I said, if you guys have any questions, comments, or want to give some feedback, you can send us an email at thereadersonthewall@gmail.com. And for people in the Game of Thrones Addicts page, and Brooke, Madison, and my friends, we'll post up our new Readers on the Wall Facebook page. And if you guys want to keep along with our videos, and hopefully soon I'll be able to get some of the audio files out to you guys, and you can keep up with it by liking that page. If that's all, guys, then I guess we're wrapped up for the night.
Hey, we did it under 2 hours tonight.
Woo! High five!
Very impressive.
All right.
Watch. I talk so much, you guys will be like, oh, we did it in an hour. Nice.
We won't have all of your deep insight. I'm getting nervous.
No, you guys will do good. So my plan is for this week is I'm just going to be a little more active in the group. Because I'm trying to find a good balance of, like, putting my thoughts in the show, but also keeping the group.
I know, I have a hard time keeping up with the post because I'm like, I don't want to give away all my nuggets.
Yeah.
No, that's literally what I'm thinking. I'm like, I want people to be able to watch the show, but I want to keep the post alive. But this week I'm probably just going to go ham on the post, and we'll probably get some activity there.
We'll just read what he says, bro.
There we go. Harrison says.
I'll still send you my discussion questions that I think of. I'll send them to you if you guys want to use that, but I'll let you guys figure it out. You guys can decide who's going to kind of host and run things.
We'll open up a side chat.
There you go. Perfect. All right, guys. Well, I'm going to go watch the new season of Veronica Mars.
Ooh, oh, well, have fun.
Of course.
I'm going to finish my book.
I'm going to go drive home and go to bed because it's late here.
No, do that. Get some sleep, guys. I'll see you guys around.
Bye, guys.